Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Welcome to this special edition of Breaking Banks and the Futurists. We are delighted to have some regulars back on the show with us. Although, Irina, I don't think you've been on the show. We have Robert Scoble and Irina Cronin joining us to talk about their new book, Infinite Retina, available now wherever good books are sold. And Brian Romley is back on. Obviously, he and Robert get on great, and so whenever we have them both on, we get into this stuff. And helping me as co-host today is a fellow futurist, Miss Metaverse, also known as Katie King, my better half. So, Katie, welcome back as co-host.
Oh, hey. Thank you.
Yeah, for those of you that don't know our guests on the show today, Robert, do you want to give a brief intro of your career?
Yeah, 10-second. Yeah. I started out in life as a journalist at a programming magazine, Basic Pro magazine, and that led me into working at Microsoft as a blogger, and that led me into a media world where I interviewed 6,000 entrepreneurs all about technology, and now I'm working with Irina at Infinite Retina and helping companies figure out their strategy and their go-to-market kind of stuff. So,
great. Yeah. And Irina?
Hi, I'm Irina Cronin, and I'm the CEO of Infinite Retina, working with Robert Scoble. I started out in finance and strategy and worked on Wall Street for a number of years as an equity research analyst, following a lot of different verticals. And this led into following VR, and now I'm full scale into spatial computing.
Very cool. Well, we're going to get into that and get a definition of spatial computing, I would have called it, but that's my Aussie coming out. And Brian Romley, welcome back. You want to give a brief overview of what you do? A ton of stuff, but what's the short version of the bio?
Thank you, Brett. Yeah, I do a lot of things. I probably am doing more building now than anything. I have guided companies, both legacy and startups, in all things technology, philosophically, you name it, I've worked with. And I've started a few companies. One of my companies went on to the Inc. 500. And lately, I've been talking to computers, and they've been talking back in the voice-first revolution.
So you're getting a head start on the robot overlords, building relationships with them right now. So thanks for that. Of course, Katie needs no introduction as Miss Metaverse. But before we get into the show, I will thank our sponsor for this week's episode, which is Jack Henry & Associates. They're a great supporter of the show generally. So, all right. So let's get into the new book, Robert and Irina. So, Robert, this is your fifth book, is it, or...?
Fourth and a half, actually.
Fourth and a half. A
book on net meeting that nobody remembers anymore.
Right. Yeah. And so, obviously, this sort of does fit well with some of your previous books in terms of the history of computing, which has been a common theme in the books that you've written and where spatial computing is going to take us. But let's get a definition of that first. So,
Irina is much better at the definition.
Yeah, than I am. Irina, what is the definition of spatial computing? Because we hear a lot of terms, VR, AR, you know, mixed reality, all of these sort of things. So how would you define spatial computing? Because you use that as the definition of all of these technologies, or a set of technologies, rather, in the book.
Yes, it's actually an umbrella term. So it's all the technologies that a person, virtual being or robot, would need to move through a three-dimensional world. And these technologies include artificial intelligence, computer vision, augmented reality, virtual reality, sensor technology, and automated vehicles. So there's a lot of hardware and software technology that intersect, that work together to make people and robots and virtual beings able to move through these new worlds.
Yeah. We argued out the umbrella term quite a bit, right, Irina? Because, you know, the industry started calling some of pieces of this like immersive, or some of it mixed reality or XR. And when we started thinking about all the component technologies like the 3D sensors or the AI that goes in, it's very similar to the 3D sensors and AI that's in an autonomous car or a robot. In fact, oftentimes the people who are working on these systems are switching jobs back and forth between a robot company and an AR company or an autonomous car company. Does that make sense? Why we call it spatial computing instead of trying to use a different term?
Yeah, I think so. I think probably part of it is the fact that you're trying to quantify the world, right? The space around you. And so, you know, you're projecting into that world, you know, a lot of the technologies you're talking about are computers being aware of their surroundings, being aware of the space that they exist in. And when you talk about high levels of autonomy, it's clear that they can't do that without those elements of competency in respect to sensors and so forth.
Yeah. You know, Brett, I would go on to say that there is an extension to this that I think some people who are not really immersed in the subject sort of miss. And that is, it is not just the external mechanical process, but it's also the internal virtual process. There's representation of the real world in a virtual world, and there's a representation of the mechanical world. So these two sort of interplay and interact. And that's why I think Robert and Irina have really built the ultimate definition. I think everything's going to kind of fall into this categorization at some point.
Go ahead, Robert.
It even includes like Brian's favorite topic, voice first, because soon we're going to be wearing a pair of glasses or have a bunch of devices around us. Our car, I'm talking to my Tesla all the time. I'm talking to, you know, I can't say the words because system will wake up and start doing things because I'm talking to Amazon or Apple or Microsoft or... Right, Brian? And soon, when we add visual component on top of the voice component that you've been talking about for years, you really get a different kind of computing.
I mean, honestly, there's no other way. If you really want to have hands-free manipulation of the world and making it seem as true to life as possible to your actual reality, you've got to have voice. So that's one of the biggest reasons why Apple revamped Siri completely. The Siri that is going to work with the Apple device is a completely different Siri. It was built again from the bottom up.
Yeah, your audience doesn't know that there's a new Siri coming, so she just sort of hinted.
Oh, well, I mean, it's out everybody in the tech
fairly
industry.
Obvious that...
I'm not giving away anything that way.
It had to happen. 3 years, by the way.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, it had to happen because it was built on an earlier incarnation, right? It was basically work to get jobs to be done, work to be done. But now it's extending into a much more complex ecosystem that I believe what we might call Siri OS, which a lot of this is fundamentally going to be built upon.
One of the things I did in my past life, Siri was launched in my son's bedroom. I was the first journalist.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah.
And they showed me the back end. I'm one of the few non-Apple or non-Siri employees who's actually seen the back end and understand how it works. And the original Siri is very hard-coded. And here's a good question to ask it to understand how hard-coded it is. If you ask it, hey, Siri, how many people are checked in at the Half Moon Bay Ritz-Carlton? It understands you just fine. In fact, you know, it just wrote it. It understands it just fine. Foursquare has an answer to that question, actually. There is actually an answer to that question. And Foursquare has an API. But Apple has to write about 80 lines of code in between your utterance and the API to translate all that and go into an API call.
That's already gone, actually, even for the Siri that was updated for the newest iPhones.
Exactly. Well, it still fails. Because it hasn't been coded properly to talk to the Foursquare API, and it fails and goes to Bing and gives you a stupid answer even today.
Right? So many jokes about Siri, but it will be a completely different story coming soon. Why don't we talk about the seven industry verticals?
Before we get that, I'll just talk about three essential frameworks to the book, and then Katie has a question for you guys, which leads into that, right? So first of all, you talk about four computing paradigms, which is personal computers, GUI, graphical user interfaces and sort of UX design, then mobile, smartphones, and then the fourth paradigm being the spatial computing, which includes new interfaces we use, such as smart glasses, which will replace some of the functionality of smartphones, but also robots and so forth walking the world. Then you talk about six core technologies. Optics and display. He's got his HoloLens on. Wireless and communications. Control mechanisms. So gesture based, voice, hands, eyes. Sensors and mapping. Computing architectures and AI. Decision making capability. And then, so that's the first part of the book. Part two is, Irina, as you're alluding to, the different. You call them different visions. So yes. Different visions of spatial computing. For example, in different industries and so forth. But before we get to that, let's get a baseline on spatial computing. So, Katie, you had a question about virtual environments. Huh?
Right. So what's been happening, it seems like there's just this wave of spatial computing. And on a consumer level, people are just still kind of getting into VR, AR. They don't really understand it that much just yet, but even someone who had an earlier, let's say, Oculus dev kit, right? And in the early days, even the Oculus Go, for an example, those earlier models, you could be in an environment and you could kind of look around and some things. But now, for example, the Oculus Quest is a giant leap, and that's because of spatial computing. So in your view, how is it changing spatial computing? How is it changing the way that we're interacting with these virtual environments? And what's the next step? What should we expect to see from here?
That is a fantastic question. And it's actually been going on for a number of years, the changes that are coming up. People are working on them. So there's a lot that has to do with resolution. So a lot of gamers will say, oh, the resolution in this game isn't very high. I got better resolution when it wasn't on the Oculus Quest. So in the future, the resolution of games and of images in VR headsets, and also AR as well, although it's a little bit of a different story for AR, is going to get so much better. You'll be able to actually read words. Right now, if you put on an Oculus Quest and you try to read words or a website or a book or whatever, it's very fuzzy. And it'll cause your brain to, not want to read it anymore, basically. So that's one really huge update. Another one has to do with hands-based non-controller manipulation of these virtual objects, which is really cool. You can actually use your hands rather than the controllers that have been around for a number of years already, both with HTC and with the Oculus Rift and then with other models. So that is a huge breakthrough for feeling natural and being able to be more immersed when you actually are in an experience. Optics are coming up, which means sense of smell, sense of touch, anything that has senses is going to take a little longer, but people are working on that as well so that you have a more realistic version of the new VR world that you're in.
Add to what Irina just said, and she's absolutely accurate. By the way, all of this is going to happen in the next year or two, right?
Mm-hmm.
The thing you didn't cover is the world understanding of Oculus is getting dramatically better every couple of months as well. In fact, the head of AR and VR at Facebook just showed off how he's building a virtualized office and how the Oculus Quest in the future is going to see your table and objects in the world and understand the world around the headset a lot better than it does today.
And that's pass through too, right, Robert?
Yeah, that's pass through. So I have a little something to say about pass through. I think there are going to be some wonderful improvements. Currently, using pass through that way is really not functional yet for a number of reasons, but maybe in a couple of years that will be more comfortable for people to use. Thousands of people in the industry are working on these things.
You know, what's interesting about pass through is the opportunity to be virtualized in the real world is is really not, the surface hasn't even been scratched. And I think that's a direction, Robert and I talk about this quite frequently in our calls. I think this is a direction that Apple is fundamentally going after, is a virtualization of the real world. And maybe not using specifically the nomenclature of pass-through or even some of the concepts, but virtualizing the real world is the baby step, I think, where we're going to see this go on a mass scale.
And to get out of the VR AR, this really changes cars, right? My Tesla today, when I drive by a garbage can, it sees the garbage can with its cameras, and then the AI translates the 3D thing that it sees into an actual object that you can see on your screen that doesn't look like the real garbage can, but it looks like a it's like a video game now.
And that's LiDAR, and that's the power of LiDAR. That
actually, they're using cameras for this. Yeah. It's the seven cameras on the car.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they're using. But ultimately, LiDAR is going to be the way of the Apple future for this.
Possibly. They have some novel things which they will not talk about.
You know, getting into to that, first of all, for those that are not familiar with the terminology, Arena, could you explain what pass-through means for the crowd out there?
Okay, so it's easier to talk about it in terms of augmented reality. So basically there are two different ways you could do augmented reality. You could have your whole world scanned and then there are objects placed within that world. What you're viewing isn't the real world. You're viewing,
it's a representation of the real
world. It might be a fantastic representation, but it's a digitization of it, and it's fairly harder to do things that way for obvious reasons, power reasons, resolution reasons, you know, where you're going to store all that information, et cetera, but people are working on that. And then you have just, you know, being able to see the real world as it is and something being dropped in front of it. And that's basically what pass-through is about. It doesn't include all of this other heavy duty software application that's needed to be able to give you the alternative world.
Right. So Oculus, at least the top-end VR headsets, Vive, these guys use that pass-through technology because they have either cameras or LiDAR or sensors that can sense the room around you so you don't fall into objects and so forth when you're playing VR.
And that just turned on in the Oculus Quest in the last couple of months, where you see a virtual screen, like a menu. Right,
like when you're setting up a Guardian and
stuff like a grid.
That.
It's like you're in a grid. You walk into it. It's amazing.
But,
it's really cool.
But what Irina is saying is that there's another technology to come where the entire world is turned into a 3D mesh, a 3D understanding of the world. And my glasses let me see that. So imagine, let's talk about 10 years from now. 10 years from now, your glasses are going to show you what your house looks like, even if you have no lights on. Because it's going to know where you are in space with the LiDAR.
And it's going to have say, you could ask your AR glasses, where are my keys? And it would know from you.
Exactly. Yeah, and Brian and I talk about these use cases all the time, sort of dreaming about, you know, what's 10, 20 years going to be like for our kids, you know? And it's endless. You can go down and start thinking, well, if Tesla knows where every garbage can is on the street.
About the keys thing, so the breakthrough there isn't that somehow it's tracking your keys. You could do that now. You know, you could put a tracker on it, right? The breakthrough is that AI can
understands that there are a set of keys, yeah.
Right, and then so through deep learning, it figures out where you most probably have put your keys based off of what you've done in the past, but also it's possible that you've put it in a different place that you've never put it before, but somehow it'll direct you there. So that's the new world, using machine learning and AI and spatial together to be able to do that.
Man, the amount of data that these glasses are going to be capturing, it's insane, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, what's interesting, though, Brett, is ultimately deep neural networks will allow that data to become a representation, a shorthand, or let's call it a mnemonic of the actual raw data.
Right.
So after a certain period of time, you can put it into a small chip and it has almost no power consumption. But it takes a while to get there.
And Tesla's already doing that. When you drive by a garbage can, it's not sending the video of the garbage can. It's just sending a little Unity model or even just a database saying there's a garbage can at this spot, turn this way. And it's a representation of a garbage can. It's not a full resolution, you know, video of the garbage can.
Which is precisely how the brain works, right? The brain doesn't actually record video imagery. It creates shorthand in a memory model. And then you recall the shorthand. And it's very similar.
Yeah. And we can trick it, as you've demonstrated on your Twitter feed, Brian.
A lot of tricking.
So that brings us to the use cases you put in different industries. So given, Robert, that you've talked about Tesla, let's jump into that first, what do you call them, the virtual, Vision One. Transportation. So you want to take us through the visions just quickly at a high level, Irina?
Well, as I mentioned, I did many years as an equity research analyst, and I did a lot of different verticals, industry verticals. So I naturally think in these terms when I think of applying new technology, what the use cases would be in each of those areas. And I took a really good look at which verticals there are and how they kind of fit with the technologies that are available for spatial. So naturally, we have transportation. So that's all the autonomous vehicles. And that also include all the little robots that go down the street, although we included that in retail because it's more specific for retail. But anything that has to do with movement through space that's carrying something that uses spatial computing. And then we've got technology, media, and telecommunications, the TMT vertical. That vertical puts those three things together for obvious reasons, because in the last few years, lots of media companies are connected with technology companies, and then telecom comes in, especially now with 5G. So they're all interconnected. And then we have manufacturing, which has used spatial computing for a while already with robots, because that's sensor technology and also computer vision, which is extremely important. But now there's new technologies with AR that they're using. Retail, an obvious one, which crosses over between consumer into logistics. Healthcare, which is they're using both VR and AR. VR more for information and learning, and AR more for on-the-spot understanding of the situation of symptoms. And then finance, which is pretty much the area that needs a little more time due to regulation, as you know, but there's some activity there with AR specifically, and education. Now, with COVID, the educational area, the talk about that has exploded, and I'm very, very happy about that. It'll jumpstart it, because if that didn't happen due to bureaucracy and other issues, the education area is usually lagging with trying new technologies. So those are the seven industry verticals.
Great. Let's have a little chat about Tesla and Waymo and all these other companies that you guys feature in the book, Infinite Retina. Maybe just give us some perspective, Robert, in terms of, I know you're a big Tesla fan. You chronicled this, you know, journey across the United States in your Tesla. But let's talk about the improvements that have been made in Tesla since they launched their original version of Autopilot.
Well, it's starting to really okay, so I got my car two years and some months ago, right? Back then, it didn't change lanes automatically. It didn't take off ramps accurately. It drifted in the lanes. It didn't see stoplights or stop signs or garbage cans. And all of that has been added in the last 2 years. Every month or two, I get an update, and the autopilot, the understanding of how to drive a car gets better and better. It's not yet to the place where it really can drive itself, but it's getting much closer. When Irina and I talked to Sebastian Prun, who really invented self-driving cars at Stanford University with his team and won the DARPA Grand Challenge and then went to Google and ran Google's approach, which became Waymo, even he admits that the choices that Tesla's making are going to win in the marketplace because of a bunch of different reasons. And when we finally get to the promised land of a car that can drive itself or a truck that can drive itself without a human in it, which you could say is level 4 or level 5 autonomous, the cost of transportation can start going down and can Irina and I laid out in the book how it could be one-tenth the cost of a human-driven vehicle, right? So when you start thinking about that, then everything starts changing about being on the road, about ordering a truck. You don't go into a car dealership anymore to buy a car. It comes to you. You don't even think about owning a car anymore, at least not in the same way, because you can, hey, if I'm going on date night tonight, I'll order a Roadster, a $200,000 car, because it costs $50 an hour. No problem for a date night. And would I buy such a car for my average everyday daily driver? No, it's too expensive and not useful enough, right? I might want a Cybertruck. But if I have transportation that is so cheap that I can order it by the hour, all of a sudden I change all sorts of beliefs. And the road itself, the city itself starts changing. And that's what we laid out in the book.
Yeah.
And then we start talking to Sebastian, who's building flying vehicles. Irina, why don't you jump in here before we go on to the break?
Yeah, let's go to break, and then we can come back and talk about flying cars. And
because we could talk about this for 3 hours.
Absolutely, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Not even touch the surface. That's how deep these changes are coming, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it'd be a great use case to get into. It's something that people are very interested in. So, hey, guys, you're listening to the special edition of Breaking Banks and The Futurists, a new podcast from Provoked Media. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back after these words from our sponsors. Jack Henry is a great supporter of Breaking Banks. Jack Henry Digital is the pioneer and creator of personal digital banking that helps community financial institutions translate their trust and live local personal service meaningfully into digital channels. Jack Henry Digital also helps community financial institutions strategically differentiate their digital offerings from those of the mega banks and the big tech and fintechs. How do they do it? Well, it's with their Banno digital platform, a complete 100% API-enabled open digital banking platform. You get lightning-fast native apps, integrated PFM. You get cloud-based core-connected back-office tools for employees. And with the website marketing and content management capabilities built into their community, you can launch, track, and target campaigns quickly from click-through to product acquisition. Don't forget to also check out Banno Conversations, a first-of-its-kind, fully authenticated, secure chat capability that enables branch staff to connect digitally with customers. You want to check it out? You really have to see this in action. Visit banno.com to schedule a demo today. That's banno.com. For e-commerce business, if you're working on the e-com space, shipping in 2 days or less is the new standard. As a growing business, how can you keep up? Well, this is where Shippo comes into play. Now, Shippo is the only shipping software for growing businesses that you can set up in minutes starting today. They ship hundreds of millions of packages. They offer volume discounts up to 90% off the typical carrier rates. And they do this by doing bulk ordering with carriers like UPS, USPS, FedEx, and DHL. Your orders are automatically pulled in from your system and into Shippo. They have automated return labels that are free. You only pay if your customers use them. And companies that use Shippo are already saving thousands of dollars. And on average, you can grow 70% a year over year with your shipping capabilities with their platform. Over 100,000 companies are using the service. For our listeners, they're offering their best discount available anywhere. Get a shipping consultation and Shippo Pro Plan 6-month trial for free at goshippo.com/fintech. That's up to $700 worth of value for free at goshippo.com/fintech. That's goshippo.com/fintech. Go right now, get your free shipping consultation and Pro Plan 6-month trial.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
What are you doing with your abundance of free time during the quarantine? you're like the team over at Breaking Banks and Provoke.fm, I bet you thought you were going to get a whole lot accomplished only to jump into a task and find out you don't have all the expertise you need. All kinds of hunting around, looking at YouTube videos, finding how-tos, and it still can take longer than you expect. Well, guess what? We turn to Fiverr repeatedly. We are big users of their platform, which helps you find on-demand talent at a fraction of the cost and a fraction of the time that it can take you to do some of this yourself. Find that deep expertise you're looking for. We use them, heck, even for our audio engineering. They help us with infographics. When I'm having trouble actually trying to sketch something out or to develop a PowerPoint presentation, I use Fiverr expertise, hiring a freelancer that can do it, make it look so much more professional in a fraction of the time of what I can. We highly recommend what Fiverr delivers. Search by service, by deadline, price, reviews. You'll know exactly what you're paying for upfront. No negotiation needed. And they serve for 24/7 customer service and help you escrow that so you know that you're going to have a great experience. Check out Fiverr.com and receive 10% off your first order by using the code BREAKING. That's Fiverr, Fiverr.com, code BREAKING. We're big users, big believers. They will make your life so much better and so much easier. Fiverr.com, code BREAKING.
And we're back. You're listening to a special edition of Breaking Banks and our newest Provoke podcast, The Futurists. And we have Robert Scoble and Irina Cronin talking about their new book, Infinite Retina. And Brian Romley, who's a longtime regular on the show, and I'm being assisted, co-hosted with Miss Metaverse, Katie King. So just before the break, guys, we were talking about autonomous vehicles and we're about to get into flying cars. So now flying cars, you know, they obviously have to be very concerned about their autonomous flying cars, have to know a lot more about their environment. It's in not just in three dimensions like a Tesla, but three dimensions up and down, plus knowing about airspace classifications and, you know, air traffic control and ADB, you know, ADSB technologies, separating aircraft and all of this sort of stuff. So tell me about what you guys learned in your research for Infinite Retina in respect to flying cars.
Okay, so I'll take this one. I've been fascinated about flying cars ever since I was 10 years old. When I built a diorama, that was my science project, and it actually made it into the science fair. So I've been talking about this for years. I am just so excited that I think that this is going to happen. I can't give you a timeline. We really don't know exactly when you're going to see mass-produced flying cars, which are also called EVTOLs, which is the term that Sebastian likes the most. It's electronic vertical
drones that you sit in landing. Right now.
What's that?
Drones that you sit in.
Yes, but there's a whole lot more, as you said, that goes into it. There's lots of regulation that needs to be fixed. They have to figure out where the landing pads are, landing and takeoff. The way they take off is they go straight up. So in some ways, they appear to look like helicopters, but they're not. The speeds that it could go can drastically change your life. So instead of spending 2 hours on a road, maybe the timing is going to be a little less now because fewer people are going to be on the road, but it's still a time saver in terms of being a more straight line to where you're going. And it could literally take 10 times less time for you to get someplace, which is really cool. And at the end of the day, it ends up being cheaper. So why not?
Yeah. Brian should jump in here because when you get and Sebastian's running and Irina and I talked about this. If you had a flying vehicle like this that is cheaper than driving a car, now you can start thinking about living in, let's say, you know, 2 hours
away. North Dakota.
Well, not quite that far.
Living in San Diego, but working in L.A.
Exactly. Right.
These flying vehicles, Sebastian said, the Kitty Hawk vehicle that he's running can go about 120 miles on a charge, right? So you start thinking, okay, could I live, you know, 80 miles away from a city center, right? 80 miles away from New York, the housing prices get a lot cheaper than living in Manhattan, right? And then you start thinking about how does it change the city? How are tax rates going to change? How is culture going to change? How is housing value going to change? And that's what Brian thinks so deeply about. And we laid out some of these changes in the book, but how do you think this changes the world?
Robert, yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's interesting because from a technological standpoint, we're talking about, you know, AI driving the traffic lane, so to speak. We have horizontal growth, you know, literally hundreds of lanes that can be assembled. You have the ability to obviously have high speed lanes, low speed lanes. So that's pretty much, it's a very cut and dry thing. There's going to be mass communication. There's going to be emergency landing areas. And they're pretty much going to follow road structures, at least initially. And then after that, we'll see changes. But yes, the societal changes, Robert and I have talked about a lot. We've already seen it in the current pandemic 2020 environment and the post-pandemic environment, if we could say that at this point, coming along.
What are we going to call this pandemic historically?
I think it's just going to be pandemic 2020. I think people are going to not care about whether it's a COVID or a coronavirus. That becomes irrelevant.
Some people are calling it the Great Reset. Some people are calling it
societal-wise. But we've already restructured the organization of corporations and where people are going to locate. And that's the precursor to this because we simply couldn't have moved so quickly in such a short period of time unless this reset took place. Right. And now a lot of things that were sort of impossible and futuristic, the doors start opening up and you start saying to yourself, well, that's completely feasible. We've already demonstrated the proof case that productivity is actually increasing when people get to work where they want and pretty much when they want. And now it's just a process of how do we transport and what do we do with our time? Because we're going to have a lot more time on our hands because our productivity increases and we're not coalescing on freeways and the two-hour commutes that some people are facing.
Right. So you may have to go in and you have your VTOL that you can take in, but otherwise you'll have your Kingsman AR glasses where you can have the boardroom meeting, right?
Exactly.
I don't know. Yeah.
Sleep detection.
With businesses, okay, so businesses are motivated by saving money, right? So wherever they can save a lot of money and it looks like, hey, this is a great opportunity to save a lot of money and people are kind of really into it now. So why don't we just try it? So I do think that the spatial computing has a great opportunity now that it didn't have before. It would have taken a couple more years more. And there are a number of people now working, trying to update virtualization for conferences and other kinds of communication things that wouldn't have been thought of as a mass kind of thing for people around the world. It's a global kind of use case. I tend to think that in general, when more time is open up during the day because you're more productive, usually businesses want you to work even more. So I'm not as optimistic as Brian is with now all of a sudden you're going to have all this time on your hands. Just like with personal computers, at the beginning, when businesses started using them, everyone was like, oh, it's going to make everyone so much more productive. We can have like a 5-hour workday. And in fact, it created more work because the more smarter you appear, the more you could do. And it kind of builds up on that. But anyway.
Yeah, but there's whole new opportunities that are going to be arising because of this technology that's coming out. I mean, look at what's happening now. You have gamers like Ninja, who, because of Twitch, built his own brand, became a hero to the gaming culture, the gaming world, and esports is huge now. I mean, I hear they're converting many of these malls, you know, the big box stores like Macy's, you know, many that are, that's just an example, but there's many stores that are closing down, malls are closing down, they don't know what to do with the space, and they're converting them into esports arenas because it's the job of the future. And I think that all the technologies we're talking about today are all going to be for the generations that are emerging now. You know, I mean, Gen Z, Alpha.
Look at NASCAR.
That's what I was going to bring up, Brian. Irene and I joke with each other all the time that if you told us January 1st, you know, Brian, if you were on this show January 1st and you said, oh, sometime this year, your teachers are going to be on Zoom. There's not going to be physical schools. NASCAR is going to get closed down and they're going to race online. I would look at you like you're a flat earther, crazy person. Here we are in May.
Yeah.
Flat earthers. Yeah, what are you going to do?
Maybe they're right. You know, the world's so crazy, yeah. I don't believe anything.
Well, the world is getting flatter with all this technology. You could say that, right? So,
well, we're going to flip our poles sooner or later anyway. So yeah. let's check that out.
Well, I personally can't wait for the metaverse. I mean, come on.
you're absolutely right about that. The kids I'm starting to play things like Rec Room and Minecraft and Roblox. And
I play Roblox with my kids in VR. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And these are all teaching the kids how a metaverse might one day work. And they're starting to build virtual items, virtual things, and virtual experiences for each other. And the industry is, right?
But it's the Apple II 8-bit version, right? I mean,
well, it's better than that.
Phenomenal. No, it's so early, though.
Apple II.
It's
better than Apple II, man.
I'm telling you, it's going to get better. It's going to get better when you start getting...
Yeah.
There is a gap. What you're
saying. Like Windows 3.1, right?
All right, Windows 3.1. I'll take that.
Even better than that.
Even better.
All right, I saw Marshmallow and Coachella a few years ago, right? And that's the ultimate entertainment experience. You have 100 LED screens around you. You have pyro on stage. You have fog. You have badass sound system, blah, blah, blah. 10,000, 12,000, 20,000 people can watch it with you, and we're all having a good time.
Yeah.
But now he's in Fortnite a year ago, and he had 24 million people watching basically the same kind of entertainment. It wasn't quite as good. And that's where you guys are getting at, is this is still a little bit like black and white computers, and we want to go over here where we have HDTV, right? And the gap is closing, and that's why Irina and I wrote this book, because we were seeing the gap close at a pretty good rate, predicting that in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, you're going to have some amazing things on your faces.
But so the book actually rolls out the reality, though. That's, you know, a lot of it is more, you know, that you see in the general public. It's more speculative. But what Robert and Irina did is they actually are taking the reality and giving you the 4 or 5 steps up ahead of the road. And it's phenomenal.
Yeah,
it's a lot of this was happening before COVID. I mean, I met a guy at the Game Developer Conference about 14 months ago, last year. And he was bragging that they had just turned on their first cold storage warehouse, fully automated cold storage warehouse. So a truck comes in one side with carrots or whatever, and a robot unpacks that truck, and robots move it around. And if you go to Amazon's warehouses, they have something like 1 million robots now moving things around, and it starts shoving it into trucks going to New York and Chicago and Boston, right? All without humans. And this is where Irina and I were like, we were starting to hear all of these kinds of stories way before the virus. We knew there was a jobless problem. Andrew Yang was right, that there's automation coming and things happening that are going to change jobs for people. And
Robert, talk about the simulation. Talk about the simulation of the factory in the glasses. This is phenomenal. Yeah. It'll raise the hairs.
Yeah, you do talk about, when you talk about product and pre-visualization, you do talk even about Ready Player One and Star Wars, them doing production using VR headsets. I do want to get into that because I want to ask when Oasis is going to be available. But Irina?
Next year.
there are a lot of people that want it and other proponents. They're huge.
I already have it. I don't know where you guys are.
So a lot of that has to do, obviously, with power issues and, like, we talked about resolution, like how fine-grained you want it to be. It's certainly not going to be pass-through, that kind of stuff. So if you want it like a real Oasis, I think that's probably like 8 years down the line to be like the most awesome thing in the world that everyone can just pop in and out. Millions of people can go in without it breaking down. Before then, there's going to be a bunch of iterations. So you talked about esports. We have 5G with live 360 that is happening and doing really well. So there's a lot of iterations before we get to that promised land.
But speaking of Ready Player One, right, how he has that track, you know, that he's running on, to in the movie, the main character, I forget his name right now, but he's running on that track when he's doing the VR world, when he's in the Oasis. So he's, you know, able to run in multiple directions. And, you know, considering if we are living in smaller spaces, particularly in cities in the future, you know,
yeah, how do you bring that that experience, right? Like you, the haptic suits, the, you know, like you guys have talked about sensors that enable you to play in the VR space without using controllers because they can see your hands. But what about the other element of this, which is feedback from the virtual world into your physical senses?
I've worn suits that do that already. It just costs $10,000 and you have to put it on bare skin.
Yeah.
And there's a variety of different approaches to this coming along. It's just, and Irina, maybe we should back up a little bit and talk about what's happening with factories. Like, we did a lot of work with understanding how factories are building digital twins in our book, right? And how work is changing, how training is changing. Why don't we talk a little bit about that? Well, if we talk about, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now, we're going to be jacked into a computer in some way, right? And Irina and I talk about a Neuralink and the ability to hook a computer directly in your brain so you can, you know, totally become symbiotic with a computer system, right? And well, once that happens, all sorts of weird shit happens.
Because for factories, you don't necessarily need that. I mean, that sounds cool.
No, but we interviewed people, Irina, who have virtualized factory floors like at Volkswagen, right? Digital twins, we called them. And that's where I was keying in.
Yeah.
We need to talk about some of the training and some of the things that are happening right now rather than 2030.
Right. So there are these things called cobots. Most people don't know about them. You have to be like a hardcore factory person or a software person that actually is creating programs for them. They're robots that are uncaged, that work together side by side with people. So they kind of coordinate together. That kind of coordination, to be able to get to that kind of awesome coordination, you need to have AI, you need to have the right software engineers come in and build it. And it needs to be constantly iterated so that it gets, I think this is the next revolution for manufacturing, at least for the next couple of years.
I actually have been in a factory environment in Shenzhen in China, with Huawei, where they, on the manufacturing line for their smartphones, they exactly have that. People hand off the partially completed unit to the robot goes, delivers it to another station, you know, to complete construction. And these things are running around all the time, and they know when they've got enough handsets in the carriage to go off and go to the next station. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah. And the ability to work in a factory from anywhere is really exciting. You know, there's so many people that worry about their local factories closing and having to drive somewhere, like we were discussing before. And to be able to train and be able to work anywhere around the world virtually, but have a physical presence there, it's really exciting stuff.
And Brian, we might get you in here, because my kids and the kids in the world are going to have to learn hundreds of jobs in their careers, right? Where I only had to learn three or four jobs, really, in my career. And the augmented reality and virtual reality glasses are training people to work on new things really much faster than they used to. Well, that means the factory floor can really change and be much more agile and change the product mix really quickly, right?
It's like a gamer tutorial, right?
Right.
Like, so when you go into a new game, you know, and it teaches you how to do things, that's how we're going to learn stuff in the future.
And I think things are going to be more bespoke and tailored, right? I think we're going to see the rise of fully customized products that you could actually watch being built and assist in being building the process as a consumer, as an individual. You could literally run the factory floor within limits like a video game. So the future, and that's not too far off. I mean, we're talking about less than 5 years where you could start doing that with building your own Nike sneakers from beginning to end and having the input in that process. It changes the world dramatically.
So of the industries that you identify in these seven visions you put in the book, which industries are going to be most disrupted by spatial computing? Beyond, you know, we've already talked about autonomous vehicles, but beyond that, you know, which are going to be most disrupted, Irina?
Okay, so definitely it's manufacturing, and then in the retail area, logistics. The logistics area has been disrupted by iterations of spatial computing since 2008, when logistics workers started using prototype AR headsets that had two-dimensional objects in front of them versus three-dimensional, which is full AR. So it's been happening for a while now, but it's going to get ever so much better. And the use cases for those two industries, manufacturing and retail, are going to increase by a wide amount. Now, for retail, now that goes into consumer. So now we're talking about consumer uses, which is advertising, marketing. That's a whole new world. So retail is huge when it comes to the uses of both AR and in some cases VR and other kinds of computer vision that's needed. And sensor technology for that. I think education is going to be the absolute most disrupted outside of those other two.
Yeah.
Especially
it needs disrupting.
Since COVID. Yes. It's very clear to me and others that it needs a big reboot. It's going to take some time, but the amount of change that you will see there will be extremely drastic.
I was talking to a school teacher just yesterday who's using HoloLenses in their classrooms. And now virtualized at home, and they are doing cadaver training, and they found they were doing research to understand how good is
that research is a dead end, man.
The education you learn in AR is as good as the education you will learn in a classroom with a physical cadaver. That's a really expensive thing to keep up, you know, and going, and it's sort of gross to a lot of students, right? So. And you have to store it somewhere. So think about trying to change how education is happening and all, and decentralize it so you don't have to come to a classroom as often.
Right. I mean, why do you have to go to a location to do all this stuff? Yeah. If you could better understand it, actually, with 3D visualization. So I think that that's going to take some time, but it's now being really pioneered by the issues that COVID brought about.
Yeah. And I think the rise of esports has also shown us that you don't necessarily need all of this training and education in a traditional sense to be up to speed on this capability. Games have always led our way into this type, especially in the computer world, into the future. And I think the VR gaming environment is moving rapidly into, obviously, the factory, medical, research, science, and education.
Okay, so we've only got a couple of minutes left. So before we get into that, first of all, Robert and Irina, where can we find your book, Infinite Retina?
The Infinite Retina, right. Our company's Infinite. By the way, the fact is we didn't choose our title. Pack Publishing, who published our book, said we should call it The Infinite Retina, and we were like, that's a fantastic idea.
Well, I did a book called Breaking Bank, so I'm with you.
Yeah.
It worked.
Perfect. It's available on Amazon. That's the prime spot for it. So just you could search for The Infinite Retina or under either of our names and find it. And it's also available. I noticed it was available on Barnes & Noble. And I'm like, wow, Barnes & Noble is still around? It's just like, yeah, wherever, you know, and in foreign countries, they have their own versions of what their booksellers are. So you can find that as well.
And if you want to follow Robert, you find him on Twitter with @Scobalizer. And Irina, your Twitter ID?
It's just Irina Cronin.
And Brian is just Brian Rumley.
Yep, first, last name.
Yep, great. So, and of course, you can follow Miss Metaverse as well while you're at it.
That's right.
So thanks, guys, for joining us. It's been, as usual, a phenomenal show where we always could have continued for another hour, particularly when you get Robert and Brian together. but great to have you guys back on the show. Great new book. Check it out, The Infinite Retina. It's available on Amazon.com. You've been listening to this special edition of Breaking Banks and our newest podcast for Provoke Media called The Futurists. And if you like the show, check it out. Go to iTunes, leave us a review, tweet about it, share your favorite episode with your friends, all that sort of stuff that makes it easier for people to find us and help support the podcast. But thank you, Robert. Thanks, Irina. Thanks, Brian. And thanks, Katie, for helping us out. You've been listening to Breaking Banks and The Futurists. We'll see you again next week.
That's it for this week. Thanks to our guests and to our sponsors who help make the show possible. You may have a little more time on your hands right now, so you can listen to all of our more than 300 shows, plus episodes from all of our other shows, including Breaking Banks Europe, Tech on Reg, the Finovate podcast, and more, all on Provoke.fm. I hope you like them, and if so, that you'll give all the shows 5 stars and share them with others. Stay home if you can, take care of your loved ones, and let's all work together to move this industry forward and to make it stronger than ever. That's it for this week. We'll see you again next week with more Breaking Banks.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.